This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It's coming up to 29 after 9 o'clock here on Perspective. Thank you. Thank you very much for staying with us. We'll continue taking the voice notes that I didn't get to, and also, of course, your tweets as well at Seben Gambule and at Power FM 987. Let me welcome now my guest, social security researcher at the Studies in Poverty and Inequality Institute, Nkululeko Madjozi, as well as Martin Jansen, director of Workers World Media. Nkululeko, let's start with you. Good evening and welcome to Power Perspective.
Good evening, Sibenze. Thanks for having me, and good evening to the viewers, to the listeners.
talking lawlessness, the scenes that we've seen in the country over the last little while. But perhaps we pick up from where we were with our callers, right? And the sense of, not believing anything that is said by lawmakers, by politicians, by those who are campaigning now, saying that they can, in fact, contribute to making South Africa a better place. The lawlessness, the unrest that we're speaking about, at the heart of it is disgruntled people, angry people, people who, in fact, feel as though if the powerful don't respect the laws, why on earth should we bother?
Well, to begin with, I'm not sure that to describe what we've seen, especially from the beginning of July with the unrest in July to what is happening now, whether to describe it as lawlessness is the correct way of viewing it. As you rightfully point out, at the base of this is people who are disgruntled. And why are South Africans disgruntled? The violence that we see that people carry out almost on a daily basis is rooted in our social fabric. To begin with, South Africa is a product of violence, dating back, if we are to do a wholesome analysis of this whole thing. Our country is a product of violence, beginning with colonial violence, coming into the violence that we saw with the wars of resistance, and also the struggle for liberation in this country. Communities during apartheid had to take up stones, not guns, but stones, and in some instances, guns, in order to fight against the evil of apartheid. And what we've seen is that has continued into the democratic dispensation, whereby the material conditions on the ground in terms of socio-economic conditions of our people have not changed. In fact, one might argue that they have worsened. We are going through right now a period of the highest rates of unemployment. Hunger is increasing. About 11 million people, with the data that came out at the end of April, 11 million people are affected by hunger in South Africa, and 3 million of those people are children. So there's a lot of anger at the disappointment from the past 27 years of this democratic dispensation. And it carries itself into the violence that we see. And the violence is linked to the lack of livelihoods. You know, it's linked to the poverty. It's linked to the hunger. The South Africa's crime rates, as we see them now, are not just an issue of just lawlessness. They have a material base which is rooted in the deprivation that people experience on a daily basis.
And it only feels as though it's going worse. It's getting worse. It's not going to get better, particularly for people who've lived for the longest time and are yet to feel as though their lives have taken off. Why on earth would they feel excited at the idea, whether it's of a new dawn or of a renewal of sorts? What renewal when they've been waiting for as long as they have been?
Of course. South Africans, majority of South Africans face a situation of hopelessness. People struggle on a day-to-day basis to meet their daily needs. People are hungry, literally hungry. There's not enough food to take care of the family. There's not enough money to send kids to school on a full stomach, you know, and this whole issue then creates many issues and difficulties for people's lives on a daily basis. And what we've seen from our government is a reluctance or a lack of political will to actually put in place the measures that can deal with the root causes of our social ills as South Africans. You know, that lack of basic security for South Africans is a real issue. And with the implementation of the SRD grant of 350, it's still not enough because it doesn't even meet the food poverty line. You know, it's 56% of the food poverty line, which is 624. And the food poverty line is the extreme poverty line, where it's that line where basically where policymakers have determined that for one to be able to survive or to have that minimum number of kilojoules energy on a daily basis, you need 624 rand. And it doesn't even reach that level of the food poverty line. And as the studies in poverty and inequality institute, we have been campaigning for the longest time for the implementation of a basic income grant or a basic income guarantee, which is what it is basically, level of the upper bound poverty line of 1,335, so that people can be afforded that basic security to be able to afford their daily needs.
Absolutely. Let me bring in Martin Jensen as well to the conversation. Martin, thank you for joining us this evening. Welcome to Power Perspective.
Hi, good evening, Sibenzile, and good evening to the listeners.
I suppose as a starting point as well, similarly to where Nkululeko started about how we should be characterizing what we've seen over the last couple of days, but of course dating back to July, which will for a long time be a period that we won't forget.
Yeah, I fully support Nkululeko's overview, his historical overview, and the background to this crisis of violence and crime and what he referred to as lawlessness. I think there is a distinction of, you know, what happened in July and what is generally characterizing South Africa for now and in the past several years. It's just getting worse, the violent crime that we experience. I think July was an outpouring, an outburst of frustration, anger, but very importantly, poverty under COVID-19 conditions, which had just made the poverty of the majority of people even worse, particularly poor black working class people in most parts of the country. And in many ways, they took advantage of a political situation where it seemed like, you know, the police, the authorities were paralyzed and took advantage. And, you know, it seems that it was more, especially in Gauteng, hunger riots. And people had an opportunity to stock up on food and supplies. And, of course, they were opportunists as well. But that's the underlying cause of that. But that needs to be distinguished between the daily violence. Apparently, South Africa, we've got a rate of, I think, 62 murders per day, which is similar to a kind of civil war situation. And then increasingly more extreme violent crime. We know in many poor working class areas here in Cape Town, where I live, gangsterism and drug abuse has been rife for many, many decades. Mm. children get killed in the crossfire of gang wars. And then in townships like Nyanga, for example, Guguletu, there's been a long history of young men stabbing each other, killing each other. More recently, in Khayelitsha, there have been these massacres, the most bizarre massacres. In fact, in prior to that, it was also Guguletu, where, you know, these men armed with guns storm into homes, normally at social functions, and just randomly kill. And it's most bizarre. We also know of the recent case in Khayelitsha where three young schoolgirls were just shot in a kind of assassination-style killing. And it's all very, very bizarre. I don't have any explanation for that particular form of violence. But what I do know is that, you know, as Nkululeko said, with widespread poverty getting worse and worse, economic, socioeconomic crisis worsening on the one hand, and the reality and promises of the ANC government since 1994. Remember, the first election slogan was a better life for all. And clearly, that was a blatant lie. It became a better life for those at the top of the ruling party. And ever since then, there have been these promises. The most recent has been the new dawn with the Cyril Ramaphosa presidency. And yet, the situation is getting worse. So people look towards, you know, the ANC as the main party of liberation, so that all this hope for the future. And that's been disappointed every few years with an election and then, you know, extreme corruption, the most repugnant type of corruption that we know. I mean, how do you explain under this new dawn that, you know, the Minister of Health is corrupted and engages in corrupt activity around the COVID-19 pandemic, which is meant to address, you know, severe health crisis of the entire nation. And prior to that, how do you explain Isidi Meni, where so many died? And, you know, the one interesting thing about the Isidi Meni case and the investigation is no one is looking at what were the actual roots of why they outsourced, you know, from Isidi Meni, closing it down, to NGOs or current NGOs that weren't qualified. And if you look deeper, in all likelihood, those NGOs were probably set up overnight to benefit from outsourcing from the Department of Health again.
At the cost of people's lives, Martin, this is what makes this as repulsive, really, and infuriating as it is. But do we not think that we also do ourselves a disservice when we want to point out, and to Nkululeko's point earlier, these moments that either make us stop, or these issues that we then talk about, make a noise about, spend a lot of time on discussing and so on. Whereas, and to your point as well, we should be looking at these as a continuum, because it isn't just moments. And in this country, it's a continuum. It has been going on for the longest time, and perhaps we've done a disservice to ourselves by not treating it and looking at it like that.
Absolutely, it's definitely a continuum, and in fact, we can argue that the ANC government has essentially and fundamentally continued the apartheid state of affairs. Because if you look at poverty, the racial and class divides around issues of poverty and wealth, you can see that fundamentally it's very similar to the apartheid era, right? So the ANC hasn't done anything radical to change the lives of the majority, right? Despite all the promises, the policies, and from time to time, these manifestos that they produce for the elections. So in that sense, there is continuity. But I think the big difference is, and this is where I suppose the mass psychology of the despondency of the majority of people, particularly those with their hopes in the new government, is that in the previous era, we knew what we were up against. We knew that this was an oppressive, racist apartheid regime that only represented the interests of whites in general, but particularly white monopoly capital, right? But now we have the Party of Liberation, the party that we sacrificed and we supported, the liberation movement, and we had all these promises of a new South Africa, right? So it's that psychology of disappointment and despondency and the consequent inequality and poverty that fuels, that lays fertile grounds for violence. And what tends to happen in situations like this is that if people don't have alternatives in terms of political alternatives to channel, right, their anger, or in addition to that, they are not organized, they're not self-organized, and they don't have power, collective power to express themselves politically and organizationally and able to take up the issues, what tends to happen is that poor and working class people, especially in the conditions in urban areas, they turn in on themselves, whether it's in the home or in the community. So for me, that is the material basis of, for example, family violence, violence against women and children, violence in the community. And people just don't care a damn, because what do they have to live for anyway? There's no hope. There's no future, especially the youth, right? And then, of course, coupled with all kinds of things of toxic masculinity, et cetera, we're sitting on a real crisis situation.
Absolutely. Nkululeko, coming back to you, when might that boiling point be, do you think? The emergence, I think, of other political players as well. I think parties such as the AFF, for example, you've seen a different demographic, I think, of people getting involved and talking about or being aware of politics. But again, is it translating to shifts? Is it translating to a greater sense of accountability where younger people in particular are emboldened to speak to the issues, to speak to power, to challenge power, and not feel afraid to do so? Is it, in fact, creating any shifts? And if not, and it feels as though it's not creating significant shifts, that boiling point or that point where it all erupts is always that threat that's around the corner.
I think fundamentally our problem in South Africa is that we lack an alternative. There is no political alternative to what is already there. I mean, parties such as the EFF have gained from the losses experienced by the ANC, but I think people also see through the EFF and its leaders. These are people coming from the ANC itself. These are people who themselves, before they left the ANC, were accused of corruption. So people are basically, as South Africans, we are left in that sort of state of limbo whereby we are supposedly to choose between the better devil, but the devil nonetheless. So that lack of an alternative, is what now also contributes to that sense of hopelessness, because, you know, as South Africans, we've basically realized that all of these people are the same. None of the options on the table will bring us the kind of ethical leadership, you know, the kind of accountable leadership that we need to really transform.
My guest this evening, Nkululeko Madjozi, who is a social security researcher at the Studies in Poverty and Inequality Institute, as well as Martin Janssen, director of Workers World Media Production. We are talking about recent events of lawlessness, of unrest, and what we make of it all. You can, of course, give us a sense of what you make of it and jump in on the discussion as well on 0861 987 000.
Power Perspective with Sebenzile Ngambule. Monday to Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on Power 98.7.
Right, continuing my conversation with Nkululeko and Martin about lawlessness. Nkululeko, coming back to you, the dynamic also in Gqeberha is one where, you know, every night here on the show, without fail, there'll be somebody who speaks about foreign nationals and the various issues around that, competing interests, competition for opportunities, whatever the experience might be. You saw perhaps a different dynamic, if you will, there between people who have their own businesses, right? The Somalians with their own businesses, taxi industry and their own business as well, and their own vibe. But it really again brought to the fore that very uncomfortable dynamic, that uncomfortable relationship, if you will, between communities, where you have different nationalities, for example, also having built institutions or located somewhere and have some sort of network, living within communities as well, and how they get along.
Yes, indeed. I think the issue around foreign nationals is one that has only served to highlight and also exacerbate the already extremely difficult conditions that a majority of Black South Africans who mostly stay in the township find themselves in. Our state of joblessness in this country has been exposed. Foreign nationals have come into our country and we surrendered, for example, the spaza shop business to foreign nationals. Now, in as much as South Africans would like to blame the government for allowing what they may characterize as illegal immigrants and so on, but citizens of South Africa should also carry some responsibility for surrendering a billion rand a year industry that was in our hands, in our control at some point, and we surrendered it to foreign nationals. We are the ones that buy from foreign nationals, and in the end, we sort of turn around and want to also victimize them. So that whole issue also now points to our state of joblessness, our state of the lack of skills for most South Africans, and now we are finding ourselves having to compete with foreign nationals for those menial jobs that are available out there. In fact, even the restaurant sector, in terms of bartenders, waiters and waitresses, etc., has now been dominated by foreign nationals. So, again, it points to our own socioeconomic issues as a country that we need to address. Absolutely. without scapegoating and pointing the finger at foreign nationals.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Ponto on the line from Pretoria. Ponto, good evening.
How are you, ma'am?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, and your guest. My comment on the issue of state of affairs in our country, I might say what is happening now is a consequence of the decisions that were taken post-1994, and it represents the interests of the neo-colonialists in our country. It is a condition that was created as their program to keep the indigenous, the native people, to subject them in the condition of perpetual servitude and subjugation. You get my point, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I like to emphasize also on the point that is made by the professor. See, because if you can see at our urban construct, our urban spaces was constructed as to condition us in a sort of a condition that will cloud our perception of life, our potential, and our ability to reach our full potential as a native people of this country. So what is happening currently, it is the consequence of those compromises that were made by the so-called ANC cadres, or who betrayed the revolution of the indigenous people. So what I would like to close my quote on is that our potential, our power as a native people is arrested. As I'm calling you, I'm in prison. But I'm definitely sure that if they can release us prisoners, we go outside, we are the ones who are having this potential of this country. We are the future of this country. So they imprison us, seeing that we are the only people who've got the power and the potential to make changes in this country and to impact meaningfully into the society. So they kept us in prisons. Even the Ramaphosa guy, he didn't want to release us. He said he released only those who did theft and fraud and whatnot, because they saw in their system that the people who are fighting the system is us. But because we had no other means to challenge the system, we resorted to criminal behavior. Because most of us, we come from a very underprivileged background, whereby we didn't even have the resources to acquire education at that standard. So we had to come and learn from the hard. We learn in the hard way. So
what are you in for?
What I'm in for?
Yes.
I'm in for robbery, ma'am. I'm in for robbery. And I did this because I had to survive. So
How many years are you in for?
I'm doing 10 years, me. I'm doing 10 years, but I'm done now. I was supposed to be out this year, but they kept me inside in prison because they see that I'm a challenge. I'm a challenge. The status quo. They saw the potential in me, because this.
When you say you're done, Ponzo, how many years have you done?
I'm supposed to do 5 years because they said they've got the parole system. So I'm already 5 years, 8 months in prison here. I'm here in Kotiman Puru prison, President.
You've applied for parole?
No, we don't apply for parole, but parole, it is constitutional. According to the Congressional Constitution, parole, it is entitled to every prisoner. So the foreign nationals, they get parole. But we, the native people of this country, we are being denied parole because of we are a threat to the government, the so-called the people's government. This government, it is suppressing us. It is so reactionary to the cause of the people of this country. So what I'm trying to say, I like to emphasize on the professor. The professor is fair, and his sentiments, they are so reflective of the status of the situation in our country, the political dynamics that are playing out in our country.
Let's get some responses from you. And okay, you call on a cell phone, hey Ponzo?
Yeah, I'm calling you on a cell phone, but please don't try to cause some drama for me because I'm just making my input on the matter on the table there, of which it is of national interest.
Yeah, no drama. You just called a public platform with a cell phone, which you shouldn't have in prison. So if anybody's committing trauma,
the issues
that's
you. You're discussing, that they're affecting me. That's why I'm
agreed.
Because my future is at stake. It's at stake. So I'm obliged to make this input. So as you might know, that we are alive. We are here. We are being captive here in prisons because we must not make our mark. So because I'm still alive, I felt that I'm obliged to make this call.
Ponzo, thank you for your call.
Yes, thank you very much.
Ponzo on the line there from Pretoria. All right. We'll get some responses and pick up one more call on the other side of the latest Power News. It's 10 o'clock. Nomo Sazwane. Good evening. 8 minutes after 10 o'clock here in Power Perspective. Sebenzile Nkambule with you until midnight. Thank you very much for staying with us. Wrapping up our conversation on lawlessness in the country with my guests this evening, Nkululeko Madjozi, who's with the Studies in Poverty and Equality Institute, as well as Martin Jansen, Director of Workers World Media Production. We had some calls up before we took the news. Let me also just take Peter in Pretoria, and then we'll get final comments, responses, and thoughts from my guests. Peter, good evening.
Hello, Sister Serindile Mjang.
Hey, Peter. Good, good. Thank you.
Yes, and I'd like to acknowledge our guests in the house. And I also want to say, I also want to thank our guests because the gentleman is very, very honest and his statement is very balanced. My issue is to fellow Africans, it is time we take responsibility for all of our actions. With regards to the issue in Kabeja, that was too obvious. It slaps us in the face. We want to keep blaming politicians, forgetting who puts politicians there. Mm. The politicians are a manifestation of the collective. We put them there. If they are corrupt, it means we vote for corruption. If they're irrelevant, it means we keep voting for irrelevance. What I'm demanding is that we stop making noise amongst our children. Stop feeding this importance to our children and start doing something. We, as Africans, we need to start to respect ourselves to a point where we demand responsible leadership, a leadership that will account to our children and ourselves in dignity. But the complaining is now sickening. It is too much. We are either going to do something, we must just stop complaining as Africans. Thank you, sister. I just wanted to say that.
Peter, appreciate your call, mate. Thank you very much. Peter on the line there from Pretoria. Martin, let me come back to you. Your thoughts and reflections on some of the calls we've had, the views shared?
Yeah, look, 2 points, I suppose. One is, I think the point that Nkululeko made about surrendering, you know, small business or the spaza shop business to foreign nationals as, you know, part of contributing towards the crisis that we have, joblessness, etc. I think we must be a bit more circumspect about that. I don't think the analysis is correct. I think we need to look deeper, particularly at the role of what we commonly refer to as white monopoly capital, and they contribute in two ways to the collapse or, let's say, the shift away from locals in terms of the spaza business. And it's interesting that we don't see this. In relation to, you know, migrants coming here to make a living, they do that because, by and large, in their own countries, there are very few prospects. In some cases, economies, local economies collapse. One of the main contributors to that is, in fact, South African capital, big companies that have invested in those countries on the continent. If you look at, you know, supermarkets like ShopRite, who's virtually in every African country south of the Sahara and is dominating, you know, the retail sector. And what's worse is that most of their supplies, including fresh produce, is actually imported from South Africa into those countries. So if you go to Zambia, for example, you know, the locals, they will tell you fresh produce like tomatoes and other vegetables are brought in from South Africa. So what that means is that because ShopRite is dominating there, and the importing from South Africa, the local economies begin to collapse. You know, the local farmers and small suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. And so that destroys jobs there. And people then, you know, follow the trail, they follow the trail of that capital to where it goes, which is South Africa, where the prospects are better. It's similar to the U.S. in relation to Mexico and the rest of Latin America. People follow that, you know, imperial trail of capital, and they go up to the U.S. for better prospects. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that
in most townships these days, the big ones, you have, you know, these huge malls and supermarkets. And they then, people then go to the mall to buy whatever they need, whether it's bread or milk or clothes. And so the local business or spaza shops, they can't compete with that, and they die. So I'm saying the competition between, you know, so-called foreign business and the locals is relatively minor compared to the big monopoly companies. And people don't seem to see that. They don't complain about foreign nationals from Europe or America who invest in these big companies. That's causing, you know, the economic problems and often job losses. So I think we must be clear about where the problem lies. The second issue, which I think we need to raise in relation to all of this, is we're facing a very, very serious crisis of a dysfunctional state. There's not a single mass or major state institution or state-owned enterprise that isn't without a crisis. Perhaps with the exception of SARS, right? Every single one, whether it's in education, public transport, healthcare, Eskom is another great example, 400 billion rand in debt, can you believe it? And yet we're still having blackouts despite new power stations that have been built, etc. So we have a dysfunctional state, and this also plays itself out in terms of crime and violence. So we can't rely on the state, not even the prosecuting authorities. Just look at the impunity at which not only politicians get away with, but, you know, there's an industry of crime. There's corrupt policemen, and there's just impunity. So there's no punishment, you know, consistent with all the crime that we're facing. And so you have the small players in crime will end up, like one of your listeners who called in, will end up in jail for armed robbery, you know, for 10 years. But all the major criminals, you know, the gangsters, the organized criminals that have been around, the corrupt politicians, very little or nothing happens to them. And we can look at several examples. Now, my fear is that if you look at what's happening with the violence, organized violence, you seem to have a hitman industry emerging. Just look at the taxi industry. You look at the assassination of politicians, especially ANC councillors, lately KZN and Mpumalanga, etc. We're going to face a situation like Mexico, for example, where it becomes, or even Somalia, like a failed state. And with the crisis in the ruling party, my fear is that this is what's going to happen. We're going to have a serious political crisis. Not only is the government inept, incapable, but you're going to have, you know, a beginning with a low-level civil war, which is what you had, the beginnings of July, and that's going to continue. The ruling party is becoming increasingly paralyzed. So self-correction is not even a possibility. And I just believe that fundamentally the ANC is so rotten that there's no hope of self-correction. And unless people get organized in the way that we were at the height of the struggle in the 80s and determine our own future, very little is going to happen unless we take the future into our own hands.
Martin, thank you. Nkululeko, reflections on Martin's comments, some of the callers as well?
Yes, if I can respond to Martin's first comment. I think Martin is right. Big business has a lot to do with the erosion of small businesses in the townships and the sort of collapse of the puzzle shop industry in the townships. But what it doesn't explain, though, is why foreign nationals are have been able to plug that hole and come in and run their own spaza shop businesses in the townships. You know, if you consider this debate around this whole spaza shop issue, some have pointed to the fact that foreign nationals are able to sort of band together and
bring in their resources and go and buy stock together and come back and share that stock, and because they're able to buy at huge discounts and so on. And that's perhaps one of the ways in which they were able to kill off South African-owned spaza shops and so on. But at the end of the day, in terms of our own small businesses in the township, especially the spaza shop businesses, we have to take responsibility at some point as Black South Africans in the townships, because we are the ones that support foreign-owned spaza shops. And we cannot wholly blame ShopRite and the big malls. Of course, they've had a huge impact, but the fact that foreign nationals are able to run these spaza shops in our country should tell us something, you know. More needs to be done on the part of government to stop the scourge of poverty, inequality, and hunger in our community. Of course, I agree with Martin that people need to organize themselves now against, ironically, against what was a liberation movement, which has now assumed the role of the previous oppressor. But in terms of government, what I would say is that the government immediately needs to implement, as a first step, a basic income guarantee for everyone in South Africa so that people can be able to afford their basic needs. I mean, what we saw in July, the things that people were taking from the shops are basic items.
Basic supplies. For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, and even microwaves, two-plate stoves, and so on. And this correlates with the research that we'll be launching tomorrow with SPY on basic income grant pilots, global basic income grant pilots since the year 2000. What we see is that people who receive a basic income are able to spend most of their money on these basic items, durable goods such as stoves, microwaves, food, and so on. So our government seriously needs to consider the viability of a basic income grant.
Well, we look forward to that work that you'll be releasing tomorrow. That's where we'll leave it. And let me thank you both for your time with us this evening. Nkululeko Madjozi, who is with the Studies in Poverty and Inequality Institute, as well as Martin Jansen, Director of Workers World Media Production. Thank you to them both for their contributions to the discussion. Remember, line's still open for you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.